You are at the intersection of wealth, health, and happiness. Welcome to the Wealthy, Wealthy Life. Hello, and welcome to the Wealthy, Wealthy Life, the show about becoming wealthy without sacrificing your healthy. Each week, I interview a countercultural thought leader to bring you a unique millionaire mindset. I'm Christina Wise, bestselling author, millionaire coach, and your personal guide to money, health, and happiness. Today, I tackle money wealth with Jim Quick. Jim, the CEO of Quick Learning, is widely recognized around the world as an expert in speed reading, memory improvement, brain performance, and accelerated learning. He is the founder of Superhero U, an annual conference featuring top experts, i.e. superheroes, in various fields. For two decades, Jim has served as a mental coach to students of all disciplines, celebrities, entrepreneurs, and CEOs, and leaders across the world. Some of his clients include companies like Nike, Virgin, GE, and Fox Studios, as well as top universities like Harvard, NYU, just to name a few. As if that wasn't enough, he's also the author of the New York Times bestselling book, Use Your Brain to Change Your Age. I like that one. Jim and I go way back. If you're ready to hear some mind-blowing, haha, get the pun, millionaire secrets, you'll absolutely want to listen to this episode. This is part one of a two-part interview. If you like this episode, be sure to come back next week for part two. Enjoy.
Jim, it is so much fun to see you. It's been a while. How are you?
Christina, I'm fantastic. Thank you so much for having me. And hi, everybody who's joining us for this conversation.
Well, I mean, you and I have known each other for several years now. We met back in, 2012, I think, in Turks and Caicos with our mutual friend, Brendan Burchard.
Fantastic. Good times.
Yeah, that was a really great trip. And obviously, I really enjoyed getting to know you down there and learning about you and your work. You know, we meet people we don't ever really think about many times in those sorts of situations. That was a mastermind event that we may ever circle back around and you know, what the future may hold with meeting somebody. But, you know, you've had such a huge impact on my life. And so, first of all, I want to say thank you. You may or may not know how much of an impact you've had on my life and a lot of my recovery. But, you know, I think we met for a reason even back then. I at least met you. And part of my story, and I think you know this, but we met in December of 2012, and I got really sick in January of 2013. So where I looked really healthy, and I think we all had a great time down there. I didn't know I was sick. Nobody else knew I was sick. And within 30 days of meeting you down in Turks and Caicos, I was bedridden and couldn't think, couldn't eat, couldn't. I mean, I lost my ability to really live outside of being in bed. And I lost my ability to eat. I lost my ability to sleep. I lost my ability to think. And, you know, as performers, we rely on our mind. I mean, you know that more than anyone, being, you know, really a memory and brain coach. So, you know, I was devastated because all of a sudden here I was a performer, a doer, a creator, a thinker, and now I couldn't think anymore. So circle back around, obviously I was able to recover. I've had a breakdown at all different levels, physically, mentally, emotionally, psychologically. But heavy metal poisoning is what actually physically took me down, among other things. And I had such high levels of mercury poisoning that the toxicologist didn't know how I was still alive. And they were afraid at that point that maybe they couldn't even get my brain back. Because what mercury does, you probably know this, but mercury really lodges in the brain and affects the brain and hurts the brain ultimately. And that's why I just lost my ability to think and my brain was so inflamed. So when I went through that, physically, I was able to reverse that. I went through a lot of chelation and detoxification, took a year, was able to recover. My kidneys were breaking down. I mean, my organs were shutting down. My brain was gone. So coming out of that, though, I had to get my brain back. And that's where I remembered, believe it or not, I remembered at least one thing. I'm thinking, you know, there was this man named Jim Quick down in Turks and Caicos that had something to do with brain and memory. Let me check into who this guy is. And then I started following you. again. And, you know, not too much longer I'd reached out, but I, you know, went through all your programs. I've gone to every single of your, I think, of your events since then. So you've helped me get my brain back. And so I wanted to introduce you to my audience because now, one, I need to get my brain back and I'm still working on that. But I think we all can improve our brains a little bit. And I wanted to introduce you to everyone so that I think so that you can share with people how to do that.
Absolutely. How are you feeling? I mean, congratulations, by the way. A lot of people, you know, we all have setbacks in some area. And the two of the biggest ones you're helping people with, it's either, you know, one of those wealthies, right? Whether it's their physical vitality or it's their personal treasure. And it's amazing the work that you're doing. But it's really hard for us sometimes to move forward and be the kind of person that we're supposed to be if our brain is holding us back. And sometimes it's no fault to our own. And so whoever's watching this, and no matter what I could tell people, it's no matter your age, your background, your career, your level of education, your financial situation, your gender, your IQ, everybody can have a better brain. And I know this because if people see me on stage, I do these demonstrations where I'll memorize a room full of people's names, or they'll give me 100 words, 100 numbers, and I'll memorize them forwards and backwards. And I always tell people, I don't do this to impress you. I really do this more to express to you what's really possible, because everyone who's listening to our voice now, you can do the same things and far more. It's just we weren't taught. And if anything, we were taught a lie. You know, we've had this conversation before about our education system and how it's a great place to learn what to learn, you know, math and history and science, but not necessarily how to learn. And so if anything, I think we're taught a lie that our memory, our intelligence, our learning, our potential is somehow fixed, and like our shoe size or something like that. And I could tell you after doing this for over 25 years that, and seeing everyone from children with severe learning challenges to seniors that are struggling with, you know, age-related challenges with their mind, that everyone can improve and that it's not static. And you just need to be dedicated and committed and find resources that can help us along the way. And I know this, and this is a very sensitive topic for me because I grew up with learning challenges. At a very early age, at about the age of 5, I had an accident, head trauma, and some brain damage, and it left me with learning problems all through school. I mean, I'm talking about elementary school and middle school and junior high and high school. I was the kid that just would work so much harder than everybody else, and it wouldn't show that I would, you know, because I wasn't lazy. It was just I didn't know if there was a better way. And so I know what it's like to feel like we're losing, you know, this battle. You know, we're right now, this in the age that we live in right now, in the age of this millennium of the mind, it's like, you know, your brain controls everything, right? And it influences everything. And the challenges we're struggling with, information overload and overwhelm, digital distraction everywhere, and not just digital distraction, but even there's a new term called digital dementia, where we're outsourcing our brains all the time to our smart devices. If you think about how many phone numbers we used to know, like 15 or 20 years ago, and people knew 100 of them at the tip of their tongue, it's just like right there at the fingertips. But how many phone numbers do we know now, right? Like maybe one, maybe two. And not that we want to memorize 300 or 400 or 500 phone numbers, but the challenge is it's convenient, but it also cripples us mentally sometimes because our brain, you know, these mental muscles that we need, it strives on two things. It strives on nutrition and novelty. And that's how we, just like with your physical body, right? If you want somebody to grow stronger and more fit, they need nutrition and they need novelty or stimulus, right? Some kind of movement or exercise that gets them to build their physical muscles. Same thing with your mental muscles, that we could all be mentally sharper, mentally fitter, mentally more agile, mentally faster, mentally stronger, just by doing these mental workouts, the kind of things that you and I have done together. And so everybody could do that. And I know the big thing people struggle with is their concern, because it's just, they're not as focused as they used to be. Their memory is not as strong as it was when they were in their 20s, maybe. And I could tell you, you could get all that back, that only one third, like people think that it's just predetermined by genetics and biology, but all the latest science. And we've discovered more about the human brain in the past 20 years than the previous 2000 years. And what we know is we're grossly underestimating what it's capable of. And people watching this, whether you're an entrepreneur, you're an educator, you're a parent, you're whatever stage you are in your life, you're a student, if you will, it's just, it helps. This is the biggest lever that we have. And it's the thing that's going to help us to, the faster we can learn, the faster we can earn. And I don't just mean money. I mean, just the treasure, all the treasures of our life. You know, it's our wealth and it's our health and it's our relationships. It's our purpose for being here. And so that's really what lights me up, is when I see people light up that way, when they flip that switch on and they have this level of ability, and this leads to a level of confidence also. And so whatever people are facing right now, I could tell you that you're not alone.
Well, and when, you know, seeing you do perform and memorize 100 names in a room or numbers, I mean, the first thought is, this is some sort of savant, you know, that this, right, you were just born with this gift, and the normal person could never do this. And that's why I'm really happy that you shared your story. Like, you weren't just born with this ability, this, you know, unbelievable recall ability, correct?
Correct. Yeah, I wasn't born reading as fast as I do, or the focus that I have, or learning. I think if there's one skill to master in the 21st century, in this age of information, I think it's the ability to learn faster. Because right now, it's not like it was at the turn of, you know, the previous century, where, you know, the education system, it, you know, we talk about it as it hasn't changed as much as the world has changed. Like, we live in an age of, you know, autonomous electric cars, right, that just drive themselves, or spaceships that are going to Mars. But how we learn, the vehicle is like a horse and carriage. And it's so, it hasn't been updated a lot. We may be talking in the future about education and such. But I really do believe that, you know, the responsibility lies on us, you know, us for ourselves, us, you know, for, if you're a parent, for your children also as well. And that's the greatest gift you could give yourself. And it's not even if you're struggling in a certain area, or your children are struggling in a certain area, it's not how smart are they, but it's really, how are they smart? You know what I mean? It's not how smart someone is, but how are they smart? And so it typically in Western education, we're really reinforced to value verbal, linguistic, mathematical, which are very important intelligences, right? But what we've discovered over the past few decades is there's not just one or two kinds of intelligence, right? There's multiple kinds of intelligence, because somebody who could be, you know, musical intelligence is phenomenal. You think about people who the concert pianists that can be able to perform, physical intelligence, the kind of people who are performing on basketball courts, or, you know, through ballet, that's a certain level of physical intelligence. There's an interpersonal connection, like interpersonal intelligence, where some people are just really good with other people, or they're really good with themselves. Like in where interpersonal is like one to somebody else, intrapersonal is like you to yourself. And I think self-awareness is a superpower that could help everybody knowing where you are. But we know when it comes to your memory, about one third of your memory is predetermined by genetics and biology. That leaves two thirds completely in our control. And that really comes down to your day-to-day lifestyle, your routines that you have, your beliefs, the food that you're eating, and so on. But that's a big lever. And so everybody has room for improvement, all of us.
So let's talk about learning. And, you know, you just mentioned that a little bit, but in your experience, do people stop learning? I mean, are you seeing, especially like after formal education, there's just this belief, like, I don't need to learn anymore? Or what do you notice?
I think people, they associate learning to traditional education. And so the two, if there are two times where we have a kind of a regression, it's usually after people graduate school and when they retire. Because sometimes when people retire, they retire their mind also. And it's so funny, not funny, haha, but it's interesting that when some people retire their mind, that their body is not far behind. You know, and when there's all the kinds of studies right now that are coming out talking about longevity. And they did this study with super nuns, these remarkable women who are living healthy into their 80s, 90s, and above. And they found that they wanted to find out why this community of women were doing so well in terms of the years of their life, but also the life to their years also. They found half of it had to do with their faith and their gratitude, emotional fulfillment, but the other half had to do with completely their lifelong learners. They were so committed every single day learning something new. And again, that's where we're going to grow. It's through nutrition, novelty, because that's what really helps with neurogenesis and neuroplasticity. Neurogenesis is a fancy word, but basically genesis is like the birth of something, right? So neuro, talking about your brains, you can create new brain cells till the day you die. I'd say it's a remarkable, like people didn't believe that was possible, but until the day you die, you can create new brain cells, right? And neuroplasticity is saying your brain is like plastic in a good way, that it's malleable. And so what happens is, for example, Einstein's brain, when they looked at it and they analyzed it, it wasn't larger than anybody else's. In fact, it was smaller. Most of our brains are about 3 pounds. It was smaller than most people's brains, but there were parts of his brains that was incredibly dense. And that density came from neuroplasticity and neurogenesis, where there was just a lot of activity in certain parts of his brain, because he would do these things called, he called thought experiments, where he would use his imagination. He's the one that said that imagination is more powerful than knowledge, right? Because knowledge is what is, and imagination is what could be. But he did do these imagination experiments, and every time you have a new thought, you create a neuroplasticity. And so you create a new web, if you will. And every time you reinforce it, you have strength there and you have more stronger memories and such. And so we all have that capability, all of us.
And I've heard you say that masters love repetition and that they have a love of excellence. And is this part of the learning, just the constant learning of the craft of the, or does the novelty mean learn something new all over the place? Like, oh, that's interesting, that's interesting.
I think curiosity, that childhood curiosity, the more people could take, because what happens is, this one perspective is as people go through an education system that was built for more of an industrial age, right? It was assembly line. And so back then people were working in factories. And so they had this factory like education to prepare them for that, to be able to follow simple orders. And so it's one size fits all and so on. But that's not the world we live in now. Right. I mean, this conversation we're having right now is proof that a learning is not limited to a classroom of four walls, right? Because the age that we have, we can reach, and there are no limitations like that. And so what I would say is that the most successful people that I've noticed, they are always learning, right? Because also when it comes to your wealth, whatever, however you define it, the faster you can learn, the faster you can earn. Right? The faster you can learn, the faster you can earn. Because today, knowledge is not only power, the right knowledge is profit, right? It's the divide of people, not just the have and the have-nots. It's those who know and those who just don't know. Like when I was a child and I was going through school, I wanted to be able to help myself, but I didn't have access, or back then, especially before the internet, with the resources that I didn't know these resources and this research existed to be able to help me. So some people who are working really, really hard, that's important to be able to work hard. But as we know, it's not just working hard, it's working intelligently also, right? And so I would say that when I'm working with leaders, and I have an opportunity to work with some interesting individuals who are high achievers, and I notice they have this mindset of three things. They have this growth mindset. So that's what you and I are talking about, right? Always learning, because when you're growing, you stay green. And when you're brown, you tend to rot, right? And so if you want your business to grow or you want your bank account to grow, we have to grow, right? In all these different areas. So I think a growth mindset is really important. And Mindset is a fantastic book for anyone who hasn't read it yet. Mindset by Carol Dweck is about the power of the difference between a fixed mindset and a growth mindset positive psychology. It's very worthwhile. So the growth mindset, I think, is important for people who want to be unstoppable, a real life superhero, if you will. The second one, G, I would say is grit. You know, this mindset of perseverance or grit, where it's, I find the most successful people, they go through and they're able to endure a level of uncomfort or discomfort, if you will. And the more comfortable you can be with being uncomfortable, I find, and having difficult conversations or doing the difficult thing, because if it was easy, everyone would do it, right? And everyone would have the life of their dreams. But I always tell people when I take them through these programs, either online or in person, if you will, that I don't tell people it's going to be easy, but I really tell people it's going to be worth it. Again, because it's learning how to learn is like the grandfather or grandmother of all personal growth and development. Because the faster you can learn, the faster you can learn anything that you put your mind into. It's kind of like sharpening the saw. So growth mindset, grit, or perseverance. I know recently I posted a photo on Instagram, and it was, I get a call from a friend, and he's like, hey, you want to come over to watch a boxing match? And I have mixed feelings, because I know the damage that that happens with when people get concussions and repeated blows, whether it's through sports or athletics or just, you know, carelessness. But it was a big boxing match, and it was, as the person who called me was Sylvester Stallone. And I was like, wow, to watch a boxing match at his home. And I'm sitting there, I'm sitting on the couch. It's me, Sylvester Stallone, and it's Arnold Schwarzenegger. And I swear, if somebody took a picture of that couch, it would be like, who photoshopped that Asian guy in that photo? But I asked them afterwards, because I really do believe genius leaves clues. And when I talk about, you know, these patterns of power that people have, I think that people have achieved a certain level of success because they're in a certain environment, they have a certain level of identity, they have certain routines or habits that they have, and they have certain beliefs around those things. And so I asked Arnold, I was like, what does it take? I was like, guys, you just saw two champions like battle it out. What does it take to get to that level in any field? And Arnold said to me, he's like, Jim, it takes some, and for people to get to that level, those are the champions, or the superheroes, as you call them. Those are the people that push through the pain period. Push through the pain period. And just like molding your body, if you're doing reps, you know, it's usually the last ones that you don't want to really do, but those are the ones that are most painful and most uncomfortable. But the universe and nature has a funny way of teaching us things. That's where all the growth comes from also. It's never the first few. That's where you're kind of warming up. And I think to the level of success people have is they go through struggle, like the struggles that you went through for all that time. Like at some level, you know, it's made you sharper, because when you have a certain level, and I know this from personal experience, when you have a finite amount of energy and you're only sleeping a couple hours a night, you have to be laser focused on the things that matter to you, right? When you're on your deathbed and you're so concerned about things, you don't commit. I think one of the things that people are used to nowadays is we have this, we celebrate people who are just busy. We tend to brag about how busy we are, and because we're busy, we must be important and such. And I think whatever you reinforce gets repeated over and over again. And we tend to put ourselves in situations where we're stressed all the time. And I don't think that's a natural state for us to be in. But when you're depleted all the time, it forces you to say no. And it's so liberating, right? It gets you so clear on what's most important to you. And I think everyone should have a to-do list, but I think it's just as important nowadays in the 21st century to be successful is to have a not to-do list. You know, the certain thing you just will not do, like checking your phone first thing in the morning. I still don't get why people do that. You know, as our friend Brendan talks about, and a lot of high performers talk about, yourself included, it's just, you know, how you, you know, if you want to win your day, just win that first hour of the day. But you don't want to be reacting, you know, as Brendan talks about, you know, email being a convenient filing system for other people's agenda. You don't want to just open this up and see all the people that, all the fires you need to fight and be able to respond, because then you just wake up reacting to everything. I think part of your happiness, all of our happiness in terms of fulfillment, is knowing that the locus of control, the location of control, comes from ourselves. And that we are ultimately responsible for what we're focusing on and what we feel on a regular basis. And so I think that grit, knowing that this, we're going to grow in a place where it's uncomfortable. It's not necessarily easy, but that's where we're developing the strength, the vitality, the purpose. Also, I know going through struggles leads to strength. And I'm not just talking about skill-based strengths. That's important, but your conviction, right? Like how you come out after going through that kind of experience, when you go through, you know, this tragedy, that going through challenge leads to change. And you speak differently when you've gone through it personally, right? And people could sense, I think nothing sells like sincere interest with people, because you can't fake that. And going through the trials, you come out authentically, like people could feel that you went through it. And I think that's really important. You know, for a long time, I never talked to people about my brain injuries that I've had and such. And you're right, I think I lost the connection to some people because they feel like some people are either born with it or not. And I could tell you that it's not it's not natural born talent. It's talent is made and it's created. And what you're practicing in private, you know, you're profiting from in public. You know what I mean? And so people rarely see that level of commitment. When we talk about mastery, I think that's important, because even if people have heard your stuff or my stuff or anyone else's material before, if they're not doing it on a regular basis, I don't feel like they could say that they understand it unless they're doing it, right? And so I think there's magic that happens when it goes from your head, you know, to your heart, to your hands, and you're actually doing it. But those three things have to be in alignment. So you have your growth mindset, you have your grit mindset. And then the third G that I put there for the mindset of superheroes, if you will, growth mindset, grit mindset. And the last one I would say is a giving mindset. You know, just like yourself, your business is a reflection of like your art, right? But it comes from, it's not something intellectually you sat down and came up. It's something that you went through personal experience. You don't want people to suffer the way you suffered in different areas. Because that's my drive. I don't get excited about $1 billion. I mean, for the finances, as people know, like we put a lot of it towards building schools and doing all this other stuff. But $1 billion versus 1 billion brains, I get really excited about turning them on. And, you know, I never want people to suffer like the way I did. When I was 18 years old, I ended up hospitalized because I was living in the library. I wasn't eating. I wasn't sleeping. And it's not very sustainable. I ended up passing out in the library. I fell down a flight of stairs. I woke up in the hospital. I was 117 pounds. And I thought I died. It was a very dark place, especially when you're not sleeping. Your mind goes into places you never wanted, like, your mind to go. And when I woke up, you know, another part of me woke up, a part of me of possibility saying, you know, I just can't do this anymore. And the nurse came in. I don't know if this was, I don't believe a lot in coincidence. Like, I think that we met for a reason. I also believe that whoever's tuning into this conversation, that there's a reason. That there's a reason why you're tuned into this, that you're listening to this, because, and I also do believe we also have free will to be able to move things forward or not also as well. But that's my personal belief. And so what happened was the nurse came in with a mug of tea, and it had a picture of the person that was the opposite of me, a genius, Albert Einstein. It had this quote that said, "The same level of thinking that's created your problem won't solve your problem." You know, think about it. The same level of thinking that's created our problem, our financial problem, our health problem, whatever it is, it's not going to take us to a place we want to go. So we need to be able to change it, and change for the better is better, even if it's a little bit uncomfortable. And so it made me think the new questions, like, what's my problem? And I thought, my problem is I'm a very slow learner. I was like, well, how do I think differently about it? Well, maybe I can learn how to learn. And I struggle with the same belief issues most people come up with. They're like, oh, you know, I'm not smart enough. I never did well in school. And this is just, I'm not supposed to be this, you know, I'm just successful at this. But I started studying. And for like 30 to 60 days, I started studying. Put my work, my school work aside, because a mentor looked at me and he says, "Jim," he said, because he gave me all these books to read, you know, and I was like, I can't read all this. I have midterms. He was like, "Jim," he said, "don't let school get in the way of your education." And this was 25 years ago. I didn't realize it was a Mark Twain quote, but I just started. I put my traditional education aside. I started studying the subjects of personal development and learning and neuroscience. I want to understand this riddle. I want to solve this riddle. We recently did an event, as you know, and at this event, we had Quincy Jones come by, and we asked, you know, he has this thing where he doesn't look at problems as problems. He doesn't even call problems. He calls problems puzzles. Because if they're a puzzle, you could solve it, right? And it's fun, and it's a game. And so I had this puzzle I wanted to solve, this riddle. I wanted to understand, how does my brain work so I could work my brain? You know, how does memory work so I could work my memory? And I just started studying that. And then like a light switch went on like 2 months into it. And I just started to understand things. Because I was that kid that teachers would have to repeat themselves 4 or 5 times. And I still wouldn't get it. You know, it took me 3 or 4 years longer to learn how to read and such. And so a light switch went on. And I started to understand things. And I couldn't help but help other people. And one of the very first students, she was a freshman in college. She read 30 books in 30 days. Which is remarkable, right? What an advantage somebody has who could digest and retain 30 books. Like, and I love this, because if somebody spent, you know, their lifetime coming up with this great wisdom and they put it into a book, and you could And you can sit down in an afternoon or a few days. You can literally download decades of experience into days. It's remarkable. What an advantage that person has. And I wanted to find out not how she did it, but why she did it. Because I think motivation is the key to learning. I really do. I think motivation is so important. And I found out that her mother was dying of terminal cancer, and the books she was reading were books to help save her mom's life. Because doctors gave her only 60 days to live. And I wished her well and good luck and everything. 6 months later, I get a call from this young lady. She's crying and she's crying. And I find out their tears of joy. Her mother not only survived, is really getting better. Doctors don't know how, they don't know why. The doctors, all of them, call it a miracle. But her mother attributed 100% to great advice she got from her daughter that learned it from all these books. And that really messed with my mind something fierce. It changed my perception on information, knowledge of health, of what's in our control, and also put me on my purpose, right? Because I was just like, wow, everybody needs to be able to do this. Because I realized this, that if knowledge is power, then learning is your superpower. That if knowledge is power, learning is your superpower. And it's our right and it's our privilege to be able to have this power. And it's there just to be unleashed if we know how to do it.
Well, know how to do it. And so you said growth mindset, grit, and giving. How much is like desire built in? There's this favorite quote of mine that your desire to change has to be greater than your desire to remain the same. But I see a lot of people that are stuck, that just appear to be stuck. And they say they want something different, but there's just that something. Is it maybe it's the grit missing, that they're not willing to be uncomfortable, they're not willing to change, or they're just so... those habits are, so gripping. But what is that piece that really differentiates those that otherwise have we all have really the same capacity to learn and to, but there's something, there's that additional piece, I think.
Yeah. I could talk about what I feel like the guiding principle is, and then a couple of techniques. I really do believe that drive and that wanting, that desire, that hustle, if you will, is the difference that makes a difference. Because just when people are taking incredible amounts of action, just results happen, right? Especially if it's smart action. And so I understand that people are complacent, but if there's a gap between where you are and where you want to be in any area, if we're healthy, I think, and I mean, that nobody has that perfect life, right? It's independent of what you see on social media, where everybody has the highlight trailer of everything, which creates all kinds of, they call it Facebook depression, right? Like it's really, people are measuring their life based on this highlight reel of everybody else. But instead of a highlight reel, it's hard, when we're getting real about ourselves, I think, I was doing this talk up in Silicon Valley, and afterwards, Bill Gates comes up to me. And we have this conversation, and I had this thing where I was just, if you could have anyone's superpower, what would it be, Bill? And he says, the ability to read faster, Jim. And I was like, oh, I can totally help you do that. but we had this deep conversation about the future of education. And if someone was listening to this conversation, it would be obvious that I was coming to this this challenge of this education from my perspective, which was adult learning theory. Right. And he was approaching it from his perspective, which was technology, right? Which makes sense. And we're talking about that. And it's so interesting because I think we do a program online called Quick Thinking, which is about decision making and problem solving. And I think one of the best ways to solve a problem, one of the reasons why we can't all the time, is because we always approach it the same exact way, from the same exact perspective. And I think it's important to be able to change perspective and try on new hats, if you will. But somebody was listening and it's like, hey, the adult learning theory and technology, is there anything else missing? And we talked about it and we thought about it and we both came to the same conclusion. It's desire, human motivation, because people often know what to do, but they don't often do what they know. And so going back to the motivation of this young woman who read 30 books in 30 days, she was very crystal clear about the reasons. And when I talk about motivation, making it practical. What I do is let's say I want to get myself to do something and my motivation to go to the gym or to work out is probably a 3 because I just got off a flight and I'm tired and sleep well the next day and I still have these projects to do and I can't talk myself out of it. But I'll say maybe it's a 3 and I'll think about if I want it to be a 4 or 5, what would I have to do differently? And I would kind of psych myself up to doing that by changing either my body or anything. or my mindset, if you will. But one of the things that makes it easier, like if people procrastinate things, there's a few things that people could do. Like if they procrastinate going to the gym or reading that book or doing the things that they need to do, which we're all guilty of, I would say one of the things is know your why, right? And one of my favorite books, business books or even life books, is called Start With Why, by Simon Sinek. And even if you're not a strong reader and you want to watch his TED Talk, it's remarkable. It's one of the top five TED Talks of all time. Start With Why, Simon Sinek. But what I know is that reasons reap rewards. Reasons reap results. I just call it H cubed. I mentioned it before, that you could visualize things in your head or affirm things in your head or set goals in your head and keep it mental. But if you're not acting with your hands, usually what's missing from your head to your hands is the second H, which is your heart. And that's your emotions, right? The energy, emotion, motivation. Even when you think about it, what's your motive for action? What's your motive for taking action? And so coming up with reasons, even for things like remembering people's names, everyone can remember a one word, right? A name or two words, right? Your brain's this most unbelievable supercomputer on the planet. So one of the techniques I teach, just in terms of a brain hack, is just ask yourself, why do I want to learn this person's name? Why do I want to retain this person's name? Maybe it's to show the person respect. Maybe it's to create a new relationship or friendship. Maybe it's to make a sale. Maybe it's to practice these techniques I learned on this, from Jim Quick. Because if you can't come up with one reason, though, you won't do it. And I always tell people, let's say someone's horrible with names, but I say there's a suitcase here of $100,000 cash. If you just remember the name of the next person you meet, the next stranger, who's going to remember that name? Everybody. Right. And so it had nothing to do with their potential. It had zero to do with their capacity or capability. It had everything to do with whether or not they wanted to. And so I would say to get over that hump of procrastination where you feel stalled, tune in, number one, to your why, because reasons reap rewards, results. The number two thing I would say is people think that beating yourself up over things, and this is interesting because intuitively, some people think, well, if I beat myself up over it and I say, oh, I can't believe I ate that food or I didn't do this or I didn't, whatever your taxes, whatever you put off, you beat yourself up for it. It actually makes it more difficult to actually get yourself back on track. That the latest research says to be kind to yourself, that when you're making mistakes and you're not following through, it's actually better to be light with yourself and acknowledge that you're taking on a lot right now, that you're only human and that it's okay. And you give yourself permission like that. And you're more likely to get back on track that way, as opposed to giving yourself a lot of ache for doing that. So I would say number two, besides knowing your why, is to be kind to yourself. Number three, I would say tiny habits. And what I mean by that is just research out of Stanford University, pioneered by BJ Fogg. Stanford, the labs for persuasion and influence. This is where like Instagram came out of and everything. So think about the psychology that goes into making something like that addictive, right? With the dopamine fixes, where every like and share and comment and everything gets people going, and it, in a way, kind of fries our reserves. So that way, later on, we're just spent. It's spent because we hyper-stimulated ourselves on things that we could say is not the most important thing for our day, but we got so stimulated with these dopamine drips that we have inside of ourselves. And so anyway, that's by design. But so when we're talking about that, about influence persuasion, how do you influence yourself to do something that's good for you? So tiny habits is something like this. It's breaking something down. You don't want to attack the monster because that's going to be so overwhelming, right? You visualize yourself going to the gym and lifting all this weight and be like, oh, I'm tired, I don't want to do that. But if you break it down, it's just like, oh, how do I just like lace my gym shoes, right? Because that would be something small that would lead you to the big thing, right? So for example, if somebody doesn't floss, right? And we know flossing is linked to longevity, right? That adds years to your life. But someone won't floss, then the tiny habit would be just floss one tooth, right? Because is anyone going to floss just one tooth? No, of course not, right? They're going to do all of it. Just same thing when I need 30 days with somebody to get their reading speed, like permanent, where they're just reading faster and have better focus and comprehension, but they have to practice for those 4 or 5 weeks. And so it can be daunting. Even if I'm asking people to practice for 20 minutes a day, people are like, oh, no, I don't want to do that. But I'm like, you could triple your reading speed and read in 15, 20 minutes when it normally takes an hour. It's like, oh, that's a lot of work. You know, it's a lot of work doing the hard work, right? But so what I would say is like, okay, don't read for 20 minutes. Just read, pick up your book and read just one sentence. And everyone does that. And miraculously, everyone reads the second sentence and the third sentence and the fourth sentence. So I would say, if you want to be able to make things easier for yourself, break things down into tiny habits.
And so ends another episode of The Wealthy Wealthy Life. This was one more millionaire mindset that will make you wealthy while keeping you healthy. Before you leave, if you want to learn how to become rich, healthy, and happy, then sign up for my free money training at mindfulmoneywebinar.com. You will learn my signature formula for transforming your life from debt into a healthy multimillionaire. It's the only money-making system that makes your health your number one asset. It's helped thousands of others, and it can help you too. If you're curious how it all works, visit mindfulmoneywebinar.com and sign up today. Again, that's mindfulmoneywebinar.com. Remember, it's free. And as always, be sure to subscribe to my podcast to make sure that you catch next week's Millionaire Mindset. This is Christina Wise, your personal guide to having it all, signing off. Here's to living a wealthy, wealthy life. I'll see you next time.